Welcome, everyone, to another installment of Authors First on the Artist First Radio Network. Z-Man sitting in Studio 1A tonight. We got a great story coming your way. You're going to want to stick and stay for this next hour. The book we're going to be talking about is entitled Force of Will, and it's been written by our guest. Let's bring him on right now and welcome author Tan Swiftwater. Hello, Mr. Swiftwater.
Hello, Scott. How are you doing today?
Great to have you on with us tonight. You've got a great book out, and I'm anxious to talk with you about it to our listeners. First, a little bit of background. We might approach this differently than we do on other Authors First programs. If I tell you listeners too much, we might have to kill all of you. So there's some things that we don't want revealed on the broadcast. So this might be a little different flavor than some of the other Authors First shows you've listened to. Let's see. There's a whole bunch of questions I don't think I'll be asking you. First of all, why don't we do this, Tan? How about giving the audience an overview of the book Force of Will? Let's get started there.
Okay. All right, sure. Well, essentially, first of all, it's a book. If I had to say there's some overarching theme that weaves throughout the book, it's one of recovery and discovery. Essentially, it's about a gentleman by the name of Gil Oldfield, which is it's based on a true story, by the way. So Gil Oldfield is a real person. That's just not his real name. You quickly find out in the opening pages or by the second chapter, put it that way, that something very serious has gone wrong with his marriage that he wasn't even aware of. And he quickly finds himself arrested, accused of various things, and without, you know, and homeless, without money, without a job, and pretty much all his friends collapse around him. And so it's basically how he essentially just sits there and says, well, I'm not dead yet. So I guess I'm still breathing. So I guess I'm going to do what I can do to live every day. So without any tremendous plan in place, he basically just takes one day at a time. And little by little, he gets his footing again in those different areas I mentioned. But along the way, he discovers critical things about why, you know, the arrest happened, why the accusations were made, who was behind it. There was a lot of people that enabled the situation. So again, it's people that have read it have told me that they had like their hearts in their throat at the beginning, thinking, oh my goodness, this is real. But it really is not about, oh, this poor guy. It's about, hey, you know, this guy recovered and he discovered the truth about things.
Well, folks, please continue. I'm sorry. Please.
No, that's it. I was just going to say that's my synopsis of it.
Now, folks, this is based on a true story. Maybe, obviously, names have been changed to protect both the innocent and the guilty, I suppose.
Right.
But your character, Gil... Boy, I can sympathize with Gil. I bet there's many men out there that might be able to identify, and of course women as well, but hey, we're a couple of guys on talking about a main character as a man, so this is might lean that direction on this broadcast. But hey, have you ever been accused of something, ladies and gentlemen, that you didn't do? I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that went through messy divorces. Let's see a show of hands. I'm holding up my hand. Listeners, I was accused of everything, including the kitchen sink. None of it was true. But you have to go through all that mess, and I identified right away with Gil. Okay, let's leave it there. First of all, the story takes place in New Jersey. Now, why did you choose that location?
Because that's the actual state where Gil lived. And I just changed the towns, you know, so they're... If you get out a map, I suppose you might be able to figure it out because everything is maybe, I don't know, about 20 miles from where it actually happened. I mean, everything, where he lived, where he worked, where the hospital was that he went to, everything's about 20 miles different. So that's, yeah, it's basically a New Jersey story with a little Pennsylvania thrown in.
Well, now, folks, we're going to direct you over to the link that's provided on the Artist First homepage. We'll repeat this throughout the broadcast. It's bookbaby.com is the website. And if you want to click right on through there, actually the site is store.bookbaby.com/book/force of will. Again, if that's too quick, just go to the Artist First homepage or the archive page if you're listening to this as an archive and click through there. And you'll see, first of all, the cover of the book, an overview, and a nice description about what the story's about. Well, let's back up a few steps here, Tan. Is this your first book?
It is, in fact, yes.
And the motivation behind you writing this book was to tell this story. Is that correct? I had,
you know, as things unfolded, I mean, it was a shock, a complete shock. That I don't know if we said already that this is basically my story.
Nope, you just did.
We did. I know we talked about that before. We were debating it, but
well, great.
I mean, I'm the character and the author, but both names are not what my real name is. But it was a shock to my system, and you know, little by little, I mean, I said, all these friends, I mean, first scores and then literally hundreds of people, are, you know, I'm now persona non grata permanently. So, you know, I'm solidifying newer friendships and gaining new friendships. And as I'm doing that, things just naturally happen. Like when somebody says, hey, do you have any kids? Well, yes. And, you know, so little pieces of the story sort of leak out one way or the other, whether I intended to or not. And some of the people that heard the story in the early days thought, this is crazy. You should write a book. And I thought, yeah, okay, right, I'll write a book. I mean, essentially, nobody gets murdered. Nobody is having, there's no description of sex. I mean, this is nothing juicy to write a book about, you know. So I didn't really think there was much of a story there. But I thought about it for a couple of years, and maybe, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 years. And what really put me over the edge was one day this spark entered in my head. I don't know, even know how, but I just thought of a way to tell the story that would actually propel it forward and make it interesting and readable. And once I did that, I said, you know, what the heck? Let me see what happens when I start writing this. You know, so I wrote a chapter, which turned into 2 chapters, which became 3. And then I shared it with a good friend of mine who was one of the people that suggested I write it and who knows a lot about writing, is a retired teacher, actually, an English teacher. And that was all the motivation I needed. I just said, okay, I'm gonna finish this story. And I just took about 3 or 4 months to just started putting it on paper.
Well, listeners, that's why I said at the beginning of the broadcast, this is going to be a little bit different story and a different interview than, say, if Tan had grown up wanting to be a novelist. There's, you know, that's a completely different way to get from point A to point B. But you were motivated out of this tragedy that you lived through and this crap people did to you. And due to this character, it's shocking. And I bet it was quite therapeutic for you to write this book.
It was, but that was not my intention. I just wrote because I had this idea, and I just had to write. Even if I was just going to leave it on my hard drive and never publish it, I just had to write it. But along the way, it became cathartic and therapeutic because I, of necessity, had to remember a lot of things that I was kind of surprised at how I had sort of forgotten, or not, you know, not totally forgotten, but, you know, they weren't part of me, of what keeps me awake at night, you know, because I kind of decided to live beyond those things. So, you know, I'm researching court records and, you know, lawyers, letters from lawyers, all kinds of legal documents. I'm interviewing people that had something to do with the story, you know, family members, for example, checking records that I kept along the way as I was trying to figure out what was happening, like who's responsible for what. I mean, even some of the evidence that had to be gathered from, you know, in terms of, I mean, I'll go into that later, I guess, if the interview goes that way. But, you know, there was a lot of evidence I had to gather to prove that I was nowhere near where I would have had to have been to have committed what I was accused of, including security cameras and you know, ID badges that, you know, that let you in a doorway, parking lot, I mean, a whole slew of things. So going through all that and remembering the story, it was kind of painful at times. to write about it, and especially to read it afterwards. It was like reliving it. So it didn't, I didn't intend it to be that way, but it ended up being cathartic. And it was kind of a reassurance, though, that I'm okay. You know, like I'm not the person that everybody thought I was. So it was good therapy.
Well, folks, the character that we're talking about, Gil Oldfield, is obviously the main character, and he has a wife, Marta. Now, I don't want to give away too much of the book. We want people to buy it. We want people to read the story. But what I'm drawing from now is what's on the Book Baby book page under the description area. There's a nice paragraph that kind of fills you in about the story. Now, I just don't want to give away more details than you want to give away, but your character, Gil, he gets a call that Marta, his wife, has been injured. Okay, take it from there. What happens next?
Well, that was at a radio station where I had a DJ job. And after the show, that was my son that called and said, you know, why did you hit Mom? And so from that point on, it was a crazy conversation that, you know, really didn't make any sense. It was very unfocused. And after that, I just said, well, you know what, let's just go home and go to bed. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning by then. And we'll sort this out in the morning. And at home, there's a call from the police station to come on down. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe that's where she is and I'll be able to take her home. And what happened instead, which I probably should have realized, but was that an arrest was made. So, and, you know, things just collapsed from that point on in terms of, you know, losing it. I mean, because of the licenses I have to do the work that I do, an arrest has to be reported. And that could be the end of your job, depending upon how the company looks at it. So that's what happened. I lost the job. I lost my bank account. You know, so it was just inside of the first, 3 days, all these things, just one shock after the other, just hit right in the face, you know.
Wow. So there you are. You're having a great time. You're doing your thing. You get this freak phone call. Not freak, but out of the blue, your son calls. And, of course, your son automatically probably thought you were guilty when he called you, right?
Yeah, apparently he did, which is, I think that's probably the one thing about the story that is still hard to swallow. All the lost friends, it doesn't mean anything, because then, you know, you start to realize how useless people were if they're going to be that way, and, you know, what's really important. But the thing that still really hurts is the fact that my kids, not just him, but all of my kids, could just believe this story right out of the gate and never listen to reason and think about how absurd it was, you know, how absurd the accusation was. So, that was probably the biggest shock of all.
I know there are men out there, probably women too, but this is a male vantage point program, folks. That's just the way it's going to be. I've been there. I've been accused of doing stuff I never did, never would have thought of doing, but I had to prove that I didn't do it. And my word wasn't good enough to my family. They believed this. Okay, I'm not going to go into my messy divorce, but it really hit me hard that my word wasn't good enough for my own family, and they believed this crazy woman over here, and then I had to prove that. And that's and you know this is paralleling what's going through your story. Of course, yours was much, much, much worse than that. But what a punch in the gut! You know, your own blood family's looking at you with these, you know, what's wrong with you eyes, and you're like, wait, this is all a made up story, but you're buying it hook, line, and sinker.
It's, right.
Okay, Now,
well, no, I'm glad you said that, because actually that is, as I said, writing the book was unintentionally therapeutic. But what I'm also finding is that people identify with it for the same reason that you have, men and women, because, you know, as you said, it happens to everybody, not everybody, but it happens to both genders. And I think it's been a source of encouragement to some people because they're like, wow, you know, you went to the bottom of this huge pit that was dug for you, and you said, I'm not staying here forever, and you climbed out one step at a time. Every one step you went back three, but you kept at it. And it's almost like inspirational for some people. So,
well, and you being in radio, you're going to know this. Listeners, we sometimes have controversial programs. I have done hundreds of them over the years, and people will send you hate mail. They disagree with you. And there is nothing you can say, no emails you can write back. They're always going to think of you in that negative light, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Now, Gil, the main character, in the, you know, his wife, Marta, was actively trying to turn every human being in Gil's life against him, with all with lies. And, well, I don't want to say the outcome because that might, I'd rather folks buy the book and figure out the outcome. But, you know, it's one thing to be a victim of circumstances and things just go wrong. But when Marta has this ulterior motive and is trying her hardest to destroy this man. Now, do you want to mention, I guess it's in the description on the book baby page, but Marta had some motivation. Do you want to go into that at all?
I'll go into it without giving it away. Essentially, and it took time to figure this out. It really did, because I mean, I always thought she was a wonderful person. What became evident fairly early on was that she always talked about divorce, but the character Gil was the sort of person that didn't see that as an option or as a solution. So I guess it frustrated her over the years. So she essentially was trying to get a divorce that she always wanted from the man that wouldn't give it to her. And it has to do with other accusations that were not true, that she was trying to prove true, having to do with adultery, basically. That was her way out. That was her only way out, was to have an adultery case in her hands, but she couldn't make that up. So that and a lot of the other facts in the book that are revealed over time all kind of coalesce and make it really, it makes it make sense why she would do it the way she did, and the way the courtroom drama would work out. Not that it's a courtroom drama. I don't expect a lot of, you know, clever attorney quips and stuff like that. But just the way the whole legal part of it worked out, it basically had to do with that's the way she figured she's going to be able to get the divorce that she always wanted.
Well, I don't
think like 2 or 3 years before that she ever would have imagined doing what she did. She would have just thought that, oh, if I could just get a confession from him or whatever, then we'll be good to go. But it wasn't going to be that simple.
I think we have to introduce to the listeners the religious element of this book. This is not a religious book, and we're not going to mention any specific religious denomination. We can use the, I'm holding my fingers in the air making the quote signs. It's a Christian religion. We'll leave it at that. And in this sect of the Christian religion, folks share specific views on divorce and what legitimate reasons for divorce are. And that plays in to this book. You want to pick it up? Again, I'm worried about letting too much out that you don't want to let out. Do you want to expound on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter to me whether you name the group or not, but it's just that, you know, again, we don't want people thinking it's about this group and that the purpose of the book is to denounce this religion or promote it or anything like that. But essentially, it's not an unusual teaching among, I mean, I think the Catholic Church more or less has the same thing. I'm not sure how often they actually apply
it. All Christian churches say that.
Yeah, where the only grounds for what you call scriptural divorce or divorce in God's eyes is adultery. That or death of a spouse is the only thing that actually frees a person to remarry. And so this group, you know, goes by a very, very strict interpretation of that. So it's actually fairly common for people to be like scrounging around trying to find grounds for something that there are no grounds for, you know, just because they're tired of the situation. So that's basically the dynamic. And that's part of why so many people fell for her story, was because I wasn't able to get my story out. They immediately decided, because I was missing from their midst for a couple of weeks because I couldn't, you know, because of being homeless and all these other things and, you know, being arrested. And I had no opportunity to explain it to them. And they just assumed that, oh, my goodness, he must be as sick as his wife said he is. And so they immediately block you out of their lives because they think of you as a person that's not following, you know, normal organizational direction, you might say. So that's unfortunate, you know, but that's a reality. But again, the thing that made the whole thing work for her, is for as long as it did work, was the fact that the strict interpretation of the whole adultery thing.
Well, again, we're not bashing any religion at all, and we're not going to mention it. But I think please, you had a thought. Go ahead.
I didn't want to interrupt your question. I, the way I describe it is the religion is like a character in the book. It's an essential character, just like my father is an essential character, or my son is an essential character. But, you know, there's, again, nothing that I'm trying to say, like, as a religion, it's false or it's bad or evil or anything like that. It's right. Just a character that's important to the story, but not central to it.
Well, I don't mind. I've talked about this numerous times on this network. I'm a pissed off Catholic. Mm-hmm. I believe that the Pope and all the cardinals and all the bishops and all the priests should all resign today, quit. You've lost your moral compass. Okay, enough said there. I'm a divorced person, as I said earlier, but I cannot imagine that the parish that I go to would get together, would have meetings, and that they would say amongst each other, you can never talk to that guy again. Hey, kids, your father over there, you can never speak to him again. But that's what happened to you.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable that a child can be told by a preacher that you can never speak to your father again. Oh, that preacher's got some splaining to do when he gets up to heaven, if he makes it that far. That is incomprehensible to me. And I don't think there's lots of, if you, in the Catholic Church, if you wouldn't allow divorced people to show up for church, there wouldn't be any church.
Right. Well, frankly, there's a lot of hiding of behaviors and things like that, because it is a very, very strict interpretation, over-interpretation, not just with the matter of divorce or with, you know, strict shunning of a person they consider to be an outcast. An awful lot of things are overly interpreted, to the point where, you know, if you say you went to see a certain movie, people would say, oh my goodness, how could you have watched that movie? You're not a Christian. So it's what ends up happening is people hide a lot of things. And as you said, you know, if this was a religion with pews, like a Catholic church has, you'd see empty pews if you went in, if everything was really revealed. You know, it's like it's built in hypocrisy, basically.
Yeah, don't get me started. I've studied all of the major world religions and all the minor world religions. It's had a fascination with it since I was a freshman in college. And sometimes I just look at the ground and shake my head. That's what Jesus would want, right? That's what Jesus would want, that your kids never speak to you again. Yeah, that's what Jesus taught. That's in the Bible. You can look it up, folks. We're not making this a religious show. I'm sorry. My irritation with the Catholic Church is bubbling over here, so I'll try and contain that. And now my irritation with this church is also bubbling over. How long did this episode take? I guess it's still continuing to this day, but, you know, so many of the aspects of what happened to you are still, unfortunately, a big part of your life. But from the day you got that call and went down to the police station until, I don't know, because there is no ending, but you know, it, for lack of a better term, when the situation was resolved, that's not even a good term. But what time frame are we talking here?
From July 4th, 2012, to be exact. That's the day. It's easy to remember because it was Independence Day, which is has an ironic ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And from there to February of 2016 is, well, actually, the final event, the final little kick in the gut, which was when the, you know, what they called as fellowshipping, the official meeting with their religious officials took place, and all, you know, and it now became official that all these people that have been ignoring me for 3 or 4 years can now do that with actually no compunction, you know. That's kind of where it ends, but it just dribbles a little bit into springtime because it's actually a happy ending. I mean, it's all about how, and I'm not giving the ending away really, but just the fact that that action of shunning me permanently from the association of the, you know, that religion, was actually a very liberating thing. It was something that I probably should have done myself years ago, but I was stubborn and considered myself loyal and faithful and everything. You know, so I just kind of held on for dear life. But when that final action took place, it was the most liberating thing that ever happened in my life. The only thing that's bad about it is I lost my kids as a result, and that's a permanent thing. I also got married a couple of months before that. I got remarried, and the story basically ends in springtime with, you know, all kinds of imagery of how wonderful spring is. It's a renewal, you know, life starts all over again. So it's like the beginning of the next chapter of Gil's life. Like, you just might as well assume that, you know, the last word is they lived happily ever after, which it doesn't say, but, you know.
Well, so about 5 years you went through this misery. And, you know, the fact that your kids don't want to talk to you, that's not good. And but you know what? That doesn't mean it's going to be that way forever.
No, there's no, for it to not continue that way, some very remarkable things would have to happen, but it's not impossible. It's just that my philosophy is it's better and more healthy to not hope for something that is most likely not going to happen than to hope for it and be constantly disappointed, living every day, hoping, you know. If it does happen, it's like winning the lottery without buying a lottery ticket. You know, it's like, wow, I just got the biggest bonus of my life. It's fantastic. So I never closed the door, but I never expect it to go in a positive direction either. And so I'm actually happy that way. I'm carrying on with my life. I got a good job, you know, I have lots of friends. So really nothing to complain about.
And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Hey, ministers, thanks for following the words of Jesus, you dumbasses. Am I allowed to say that? Was I talking out loud? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Again, we're not naming any religion here. You guys know I'm really pissed off at the Pope and the Catholic Church, so that is not the religion we're talking about here, but maybe it should be.
My editor's Catholic, by the way.
I hope it's the last Pope. You know, St. Malachy in 1428 said, named all the Popes up until the end of the Catholic Church. This is the last one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, look that up. Malachy, M-A-L-A-C-H-Y. Considered divine revelation. It's pronounced as such by the Catholic Church in the year 1428. And this, by his prophecy, the one we got now is the last one. That's a whole other series of programs.
Right.
You know, being that you weren't an author, you weren't a wannabe author throughout your life, that this was something that happened to you, that I'm glad you wrote this book. There's going to be people out there that are, and I hope there's women out there who will get this book. And by the way, we haven't mentioned this for a few minutes. Maybe we should do so. Our guest is Tan Swiftwater. He has written a book called Force of Will. It is based on a true story, and it's Tan's story. There's been a few things changed in there, you know, names to change to protect the innocent and guilty, probably, whatever your interpretation of that word is. It is available through BookBaby. And where else can people pick up this book?
pretty much any online bookseller you can think of, I would think, because I know it's available on Amazon.com and BN.com, which is BarnesandNoble.com. The best, I mean, that's the easiest way, just to go to Amazon, you know. But for selfish reasons, I prefer if people go to BookBaby, because I make about nine times more money for not long.
That way,
but I just tell people, you know what, the easiest way, you're not going to find it just by, you know, typing in BookBaby.com. Just Google Whipwater BookBaby, two words, Whipwater BookBaby, to find it.
And folks, we have the link for that exact page on the Artist First homepage. If you're listening to this as an archive, that same link is right next to the archive link. So it's very easy to find what you want to find out about this book right from our website. We're going to take a short commercial break right now, and when we come back, I believe we're going to hear Tan read a little bit from the book. And folks, you are listening to Authors First on the Artist First Radio Network. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, I'm James Baller of Artist First Radio, and I would like to tell you about a fascinating new book from Crime Beat's Ron Chepsik and co-author Mike Rowe. It's titled Robin Hood of the Hood, The Life and Times of Teddy Rowe, Policy Kingpin, and it's published by Strategic Media Books. The book is a historical account of Theodore Teddy Rowe, who courageously fought the Chicago Mafia, more commonly known as the Outfit, for control of the lucrative policy racket in the Windy City. Policy, often called the numbers, is a form of illegal gambling or illegal lottery, played mostly in poor and working-class neighborhoods in the United States. In Policy, a bettor attempts to pick three digits to match those that will be randomly drawn the following day. For decades, Policy had been a staple in the black community, but when the white mob flexed its power in the late 1940s, many Policy kings knuckled under the pressure. Not Teddy Rowe. Rowe famously told mob bosses that he'd rather die than give up control of his operation. Robin Hood of the Hood chronicles an exciting chapter of Chicago history. Go to the Kindle store at Amazon and buy it for just $2.99. For information about this book and other titles, please go to strategicmediabooks.com. That's strategicmediabooks.com.
Brought to you by Mistech. Welcome to the future. Go to Mistech.net for the full story, but in the meantime, stop thinking about leveling up and just get some Mistech. People all around the world share their experience and love how they feel after putting it on. We offer a 30-day money-back guarantee, along with a lifetime warranty. WTF? What the frequency? Find out today at Mistech.net.
Hi, this is Angela Champ, author of It Depends, Employee Relations Case Studies for Human Resources Professionals and Students. Check out my book at www.angelachamp.com. And you are listening to the Artist First Radio Network.
Hey there, this is Doug Dahlgren, and I've got a question for you. What are you doing Friday at 11 a.m.? Why? Well, I've got some people I'd like you to meet. Interesting people, writers, musicians, all kinds of interesting folks. Join us, won't you? You might even meet your new favorite author. That's the Doug Dahlgren Show, Fridays at 11 a.m. here on Artist First Radio.
You are listening to Authors First. Z-Man in Studio 1A, conducting tonight's interrogation. We're speaking with Tan Swiftwater. He's the author of Force of Will. The novel's based in the genre drama, and I'll say it is. Tan has volunteered that this book is about his experience. Tan, I got to admit that talking to you and reliving the experiences I had, not nowhere near as worse, as bad as yours, but I got that feeling in it, you know, that I used to feel back then, that cloud that just hangs over every, you know, your life. And here in the last, you know, 45 minutes, I've I'm going back to some feelings that were pretty uncomfortable back then. Anyway, okay. Tan is going to read from the book. And Tan, take it from here. Then what's going to happen?
This is actually toward the end of the book. This is after Gil has just been officially ousted from the religious organization he was a member of for 40-some-odd years. And he's driving home to his new wife. And it was only because they found out he was married that they decided to attack him. So I guess I'll just read a couple of pages. How's that sound?
Take it away.
Okay. On the way home, Gil thought about how crushing this whole chapter had been. The organization that claims to have the truth, and what Gil had always believed was the truth, was perfectly ready to kick him out without ever considering the simple truth. Not a finger was ever lifted to investigate one iota of fact that Gil continually asserted was readily available to them. And less than a handful of, insert religious name, friends of his, were rational and willing to enough to consider even one shred of evidence about anything that had occurred since July 4th, 2012, and up until the present. All the others swallowed a mammoth lie, hook, line, and sinker, without even considering another possibility. Even though Gil still felt that doctrinally, insert religion, are on the money, he also questioned why he would ever miss associating with people that were so fond of bald-faced lies and injustice. But it wasn't important to dwell on such things. His thoughts turned to his kids, who would certainly be obedient to the directive to not have any further association with their father. He called his son Kirk to tell him that an announcement would be made about him this coming Thursday. Saddened by the news, Kirk offered to meet his father for lunch earlier in the week before the announcement, an act that would not be criticized by anyone. Gil thought long and hard about contacting his three daughters, but he knew that they would just register their anger and possibly even gloat. Renee would certainly proffer a big, "I told you so," given her attitude about such things. So he decided that since they will no doubt be glad to know that their evil father had been disfellowshipped, it was probably best not to call them. He left it to Kirk to contact them, and up to them to contact him if they so desired. They did not. The remainder of his two-hour trip home, Gil was overcome with an unusual, almost surreal sense of peace, relief, and happiness. But having time to think meant that his mind would periodically turn to the great hypocrisy of what had just happened, of what it means for his relationship with his kid. When he got home to Julia, he was feeling all at once serene and washed out. He made a beeline for Julia, who was in their bedroom, and before she could ask, "How did it go?" Gil hugged her tightly, rubbed his right hand across her back, and said, "Honey, can you sing to me?" "Sing to you? You know I can't sing. What do you want me to sing?" "Never Ending Always, a Lori Klein song." Julia sang ever so sweetly in her own off-key way. "Through troubled weather, I will never leave you. I do trust in the man you've shown me. In my heart, for never ending always, I'll love you." Gil had once thought that hearing Julia sing that song was the most beautiful sound he had ever heard. That was on their wedding day. He now had to rethink that. Now was the moment, in Julia's arms, that he was hearing the most beautiful sound ever. "Though the world falls from you, I still believe in you. I'll ever be true. For never ending always, I'll love you." After holding each other for just a few seconds short of eternity, Julia said, "I'm sorry. It didn't go well, did it?" "It depends upon your point of view. In one sense, no, it didn't go well. It couldn't have gone worse. But on the other hand, I'm free." Julia assented, "I think I know what you mean." Gil went on, "That decision they made tonight, that is the last decision they will ever be able to make about me. They have absolutely no authority over me anymore. You know, Julia, for the past 2.5 years, ever since we met, and especially since we got married 3 months ago, I have felt as no time before that I really matter to someone and that I'm worth something. Not because of the number of meetings I've attended this month or some numbers on a report or because I eschewed the same movie as all the self-righteous judges in Sparta, and especially not because I'm making some delusional, controlling hypocrites happy with my conduct and blind obedience. But just because somebody loves me for who I am today, that somebody is you." Well, it goes on, but I'll stop there.
Wow. And now we have a piece of music to play.
Yeah.
Shall we run it now?
Yeah, this is by Lori Klein. This is actually the song in the book that was played at the wedding, and then later on in the chapter I just read, Never Ending Always.
The days, the nights, my never-ending, always all day. Here in my arms I hold you, in my heart for never-ending, always I love you. Troubled weather, I will never leave you. I do trust in the man you've shown me. In my heart, for never ending, always I love you. Innocent soul of a baby, all things are yes, never maybe. Though the world falls from you, I still believe in you. I'll ever be true. Careless hearts of wayward lovers fly, oh, they fly. Mine will be here beside you, in my heart for never ending, always I love you. My never-ending, always, all day. Here in my arms I hold you, in my heart for never-ending, always I love you.
Wow, what a pretty piece of music. Tan Swiftwater is our author guest tonight. The book Force of Will basically is a story about him, his character Gil Oldfield, and ex-wife Marta and all that stuff that went down is based on a true story. Tan, I'm so glad to hear that there's a happy ending to this book that, if you remember Chris Farley on Saturday Night Live, you're not living in a van down by the river. Although at one time you said you were homeless. You did.
Yeah, living out of the car. Yeah.
Yeah. And here we are, sometimes joke about that, and here you are having lived that experience. Now, in hindsight, I know this sounds kind of stupid, but boy, I think you're a stronger person for this experience. Do you agree?
Probably. But, you know, to answer that, I the way I look at it, and this is honestly the way I look at it, is that when you're, I don't know, let's say you're lying at the side of the road bleeding, I mean, and you think, well, geez, I can't move. What am I going to do? Any person is going to do what he needs to do to survive. And I don't know if one person is stronger than the other. I mean, you know, a lot of people survive very difficult things. It's just a matter of you don't have a choice. I mean, what am I going to do? If I don't get a job soon, I'm homeless now. I'm going to be permanently homeless. You know, so I don't pat myself on the back or say I'm a hero or something like that. It was just something I had to do. I wouldn't want to do it again, but I had to do it, and so that's what I did.
Do you? No, I'm not going to ask you that question. The people that turn their backs on you, like your employer, and we won't say who that is or what you did, but boy, it's got to irritate the heck out of you that the people you work for, the people you dedicated, you know, your responsibilities to and tried to help, they just turn their backs on you. Have any of those people, you know, outside of the religious crazies, have any of those people tried to communicate with you in any way and say, hey, I'm sorry the way things turned out, you know, it was a tough story? Any of those people?
No, not really. I mean, I'm probably being an ingrate because there's probably somebody somewhere, but I really don't. It's just basically the friends that my radio show that's in the book was fairly new at that time. So I was making new friends, like, you know, right around that time. And those are my friends now. It's, you know, basically these people from the radio station and all these musical people. I go to a lot of musical events. And I've just got so many friends now, I don't know what to do with them all.
Well, that's outstanding. It's, you know, life doesn't always end in a positive way. You know, Hollywood likes to make up happy endings so the customers go out of the theater with a good feeling, not a bad one. This story could have gone the wrong way.
I'm sorry.
I mean, the ending of this story could have been completely different than what happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, life still isn't perfect. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not like everything has been peachy since then. But nothing like what happened then has ever happened again. So, you know, I mean, it's not a story. I wouldn't call it like a storybook happy ending. You know, it ends at a period of time that demonstrates that he's over this crap for the most part. And the stuff that is still residually there, like lack of communication with his kids, it's relatively okay because life goes on, you know. So if that's a happy ending, this is a happy ending then.
Right. There's a television show about Scientology. The lady that played on television sitcom, gosh, my brain's gone blank. And, you know, many episodes of that have aired and how she's not allowed to, you know, they show how the Church of Scientology goes after these families and just destroys families with their theology. Now, Scientology is not a Christian religion at all, so I'm not bashing. And, you know, you folks, do whatever you want with religion, okay? Again, we this is not a religious program, but when you use religion, as these folks did, to beat up on Tan and break up families, that's wrong. That is morally reprehensible. Do you agree, Tan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look deep enough, you will find a reference or two somewhere in the Bible that indicates that under certain circumstances, it's necessary to remove somebody from the congregation. But, you know, the example in the Bible is a very, very serious offense that even everybody outside of that congregation, you know, was shocked. Like everybody in the whole city was shocked, you know, at how this person can be still alive. So I think it's the interpretation of that in the strictest possible way that's really suspect. You know, I mean, where does it ever say that even your kids have to, you know, or where does it say that this offense and this offense and that offense are on the list that can get you into that situation? You know, that's what's missing. I mean, in the Bible, it's a serious thing that happened in one congregation, and it had to be dealt with. And somehow they've used this as a precedent and extended it to all manner of behavior and to everybody that could possibly know the person. That's where I think that there's a disconnect.
Well, you know what else is in the Bible, folks? Idiots begat idiots. Look it up. It's in there. All right? Just because you're... okay, well, we better not go down that road. We are out of time. Boy, I could talk to you for another 2 hours, Tan. This is a subject that many of us men have had to go through nowhere near at the extent you did, but in some small way, there's many listeners out there that can relate to what happened to you, and it's a story of triumph. I mean, you were able to overcome all of this bullcrap. So I guess we should say at least congratulations and what a strong man you are.
Well, thanks. But again, it's hopefully inspirational in that I'm kind of just a regular guy that, again, just decided not to, you know, roll over and play dead. And hopefully it inspires people, male or female. I mean, most of my readers that really love the book are actually female. So, you know, thanks for the kudos, but that's all I have to say about it.
Folks, we are out of time for this broadcast. Tan Swiftwater has been our guest. Force of Will is the title of the book. There's a link on the homepage. Use that link if you want to get this book. Oh, yes, you can get it at places like Amazon and other spots. But like Tan said, he gets to put a lot more dollars in his pocket if you go through the Book Baby website. So why not, folks? You get the same product, and why not let the author put a few hard-earned dollars in his pocket? Tan, you're going to be back, I know it, and I can't wait for you. I mean, not on this topic, but folks, I know a little bit more about Tan than we've let on tonight, and I know he's an extremely talented guy, not to mention a great radio voice, as you've heard tonight. So, Tan, I hope you don't stay away too long. We'd love to have you back as soon as you're ready.
Well, thanks very much, and I'll definitely do that.
Okay, folks, we are out of time. Aging Without Wrinkles is showing up here in about 3 minutes. We've got a scoot. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. Get out there and support this great author. You guys know how to get the book. We appreciate that, listeners. And this is Z-Man tuning out for this installment of Authors First.